You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Good Monday morning to you. Mike McNamara for a Monday edition of Auburn Radio back in Studio One. Yes. Life's a little bit easier in Studio One. Just saying. Hope you had a good weekend. The Yankees lost 2 out of 3 to Baltimore. Are you shitting me? But I watched it, man. It was not pretty. So I had that going for me. And then get on a plane tomorrow. So fly back to D.C. again and do an event at the Pentagon on Wednesday for the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, wife, and a group she has put together, Ellen Dunford. So excited to do that. Do it on again on Wednesday. And do it again on Thursday in Quantico. So head down there. And then fly to Texas where do it in Granbury. And then I'll go to Waco and be involved in an event that the Warrior Reunion Foundation is doing. You met James Ferguson, who runs that thing. He was just honored, 6 months or so ago with an award. I want to say by the Marine Corps Association. Ferg doing good stuff. So I met him. Yeah, how about that? I met him on last Wednesday at the Hillvet dinner. Yeah, so I look. I'm like, that's Ferguson. and lo and behold, it was him. So it was nice to finally meet him. We have mutual friends and so I'll see him and Josh Goldberg and Waco as they do one of their reunions. Or Ferguson does his reunion. Josh going down there to help out a little bit, as am I. So and then to North Carolina. So still working out the details on that, but to the 2nd Marine Division, and then the Marine Corps Expo after that, and then come home. So won't be in Studio One for very long. I will tell you this though, the weekend was sad. It was a sad weekend. On Saturday, Carrie Riley, who you've heard on this program, her husband was a Ranger and also deployed to Iraq as a member of the National Guard, was in one of those ID, you know, finding units. They go out on the road every day. They have, you know, very specialized vehicles, high clearance, angled hulls, designed to survive IED blast. And he was at one, part of one of those. I want to say he got blown up 9 times. Came back with very, very bad traumatic brain injury, and ultimately took his own life. Well, Terry Cosentini introduced us, and so, and then I had Kerry Riley on my program. We talked about her fight, you know, for benefits, you know, when your husband comes home and he's damaged and he doesn't do, you know, he doesn't fill out forms, he doesn't enroll in stuff, and should be attributable to his traumatic brain injury. Anyway, she sent me a message, hey, are you around? And I said, yeah, what's up? And she said, Kerry Cosentini passed away today. And for those of us who know, you've heard both Will and Kerry on the program, I mean, just, you know, literally unbelievable news. And didn't feel well and went to the hospital and died on Saturday. So Will is a great friend of mine. Just saw him maybe a month ago down at the Marine West Expo at Camp Pendleton. He's on the board of governors of the Marine Corps Association, or whatever they call that group. And so he was there at an annual meeting, and or one of their meetings. I don't know if it was an annual one. And so so I got a chance to talk to Will and hang out. And they had moved to Kansas City a year or two ago. Will in the railroad business now. And but a smart guy and a good guy and a great friend. I have known he and Kerry since 1990 when we served together at the basic school. So just devastating news. And Kerry was one of the women. There's a whole group of wives who dealt with the brunt of the Marine Corps had created this program called the Key Wife Program and put wives in positions to move information and kind of handle things. Well, I don't know how well that was thought through, to be honest with you, because when the war started and they had to deal with the number of people killed in action, the number of people wounded in action, it was brutal. A core of those women started the Semper Fi Fund, and Kerry was one of the people in that larger group, right? Not a principal in the fund itself, but in that larger group that was dealing with those issues at that time. And things like, if your husband's blown up, and in the course of getting blown up, he's burned, right? And now he's got to go to Brook Army Medical Center in San Antonio, and he's going to be there for 6 months. You know, how does that work for your family? If your family can't get there and your family can't afford financially to go, you know, to be there, but he needs you to be there because he needs your support. How does all that work? And so the women who started the Semper Fi Fund and the women who dealt with those issues, you know, are just incredible. And Kerry was one of them. And so I kind of ran back into her after I started All Marine Radio, and I saw, I don't know what I saw. Oh, I know what I saw. I saw a video of on the internet, and it was an event that happened at Camp Pendleton, and it was a Marine corporal amputee was trying to get to the top of what's known as First Sergeant Hill, just a little bit south of Camp San Mateo, the home of the 5th Marine Regiment. And I was watching this thing, and you see all these Marines screaming, right? And there's some in uniform and then some not in uniform. And so you're wondering, okay, who is this? What are they doing? And this hill is steeper than 45 degrees, okay? So they're struggling to get up it. And here you have an amputee who's fighting to get up it, and they're just screaming and yelling, going crazy. And then when he finally gets to the top, they lose their mind. But it is awesome. It was an awesome video. So I looked like, well, where did this come from? It came from a website called The Boys of 3-5. And so I sent the guy who's named as the principal on the site. His name is Mark Soto. And I sent him a message. And I get a response back. Hi, Mac. This is Kerry Cosentini. And I says, wait a minute. I thought you were Mark Soto. She says, I help moderate the page. I'll put you in touch with him. How are you? So had a nice conversation and talked to Kerry. And then, Kerry, she'd send me names of people to have on the program and would comment on things that we did. And so, so it was terrible news on Saturday. So thoughts and prayers go out to Will and their kids. And I don't know, I have a lot of, I think as a lot of my friends do, we have a lot of experience doing death, and it doesn't make it any easier. I think the only thing we have all learned is, truly to celebrate, someone's life and how fortunate we were to have them in their lives and to continue to embrace, something about that person in your life. And in that way, you keep them alive forever. And, the thing about Kerry that I think all of us is, I mean, she was a fighter. She was a fighter and she wasn't afraid to fight for what she thought was right. And so anyway, just want to say our thoughts and prayers go out to Will and their entire family. And so just a sad day over the weekend on Saturday. Let me tell you what we're going to do today on the program. We're going to go into expeditionary mode today, and the program's only going to be 2 hours. So first hour, we'll do what we normally do, and then the second hour, we will check in with Alex Hollings and talk to him. And there's a bunch of stuff in the news relative to Marineland. This is from Ohio Man. It's entitled Condolences. I found All Marine Radio via one of Kerry's Facebook posts shortly after you started. Will is one of my favorite All Marine Radio semi-regulars. I saw the news on Saturday afternoon via mutual friend and was blown away. I don't think as men and as husbands, I don't think any of us expect, our wives to pass away before we do. That's not in the script, man. That's not how it goes. Shocking. And the fact that she hadn't, been sick or anything like that you heard about, I don't know if that makes it harder, but anyway, she was wonderful to me. Relatives, especially, starting out and looking for help and she had a lot of people that followed her, and when she liked something you did or retweeted something you put out there, I mean, it helped. I mean, you had never met Ohio Man had you not, maybe he would have found us at some point, but, she certainly helped me, and for that I will forever be indebted to her. So Alex Holling is going to join us in the news. And more sad news from Saturday night. Cobra helicopter crashed outside of Marine Corps Station Yuma, killing both pilots. It was involved in the WTI program, which is a huge program for those of us who've ever supported it. The weapons, when that thing is a beast in terms of the way it's run, and it takes no small amount of support, having supported it more than once, to make that thing work. And Marines come from all over OneMeth, and dare I say, I think all over the Marine Corps to support it. And not only the aviation units, but additional maintainers, additional communicators, additional electronic warfare people, additional grunts. So, yeah, it's a big deal. And so, evidently in the process of supporting that, we lost two pilots. So, their names have not been, released. And, so we will, but we'll talk about that a little bit. We'll get to see if Alex Hollings, who's the, he's an aviation guy now among all the other things he does. But we'll talk about the track record of the Cobra, which has a pretty solid track record in terms of safety. So, and then I'm trying to track down a helicopter pilot. I don't know. So, what are the most often experienced, malfunctions in a helicopter? What are the immediate action things that you do to get that thing on the deck? And I'd just be curious, in a very general sense, not particularly to this accident, but, those things have systems built into them to allow you that if something does go wrong, that that you can get that thing to the deck. And anyway, so bad news there. A story from last week that continues to be in the news, and that is the death of a Marine at Camp Pendleton. Serving as, I want to say, the OD, the duty NCO, was found dead of a gunshot wound to the head at around 4 in the morning. The initial thought was that it appeared to be a suicide. The Marine Corps backed away from that as NCIS investigated, and then late last week said it was determined it was a suicide. And then after that, the family came out and said they did not believe that. So that story's in the news. We'll talk about that a little bit. And also another story in the news, the first company of recruits that that trained together, a female company inside of a male company, at Paris Island graduated last week. So play a little video that the Marine Corps public affairs people did relative to Paris Island. And then we'll talk about it. My own opinion is that it's a nothing burger, because the Marine Corps has been doing this since at least I went through OCS in 1980, because this is the way we were configured. In our U-shaped barracks in Quantico, we had, let's see, there would have been, four platoons? Four or five platoons? I can't remember anymore. But four or five platoons, one on each deck of the barracks. And across the U from me on the second deck was the female platoon. And they did everything with us. They were their own platoon. And so this is not much of a breakthrough through in terms of gender integration. It is the OCS model as it's existed for decades in the Marine Corps, so at least almost 40 years as far as I know. But yeah, so we'll talk about that a little bit. I'll play a little audio from that, and then let's see. Tomorrow, I'm hoping you're going to hear Jack Riley. I'll tell you what we're going to do this week. Tomorrow you're going to hear Jack Riley, and I think he's going to get back to me here in a little bit. And then on Wednesday, I did an interview with Kerry Cosentini. So I'm going to interview a few of her friends, people that I know, and you'll hear those interviews before you hear the interview I did with Kerry. And what we talked about was that period of time in the Marine Corps history when the war started, and specifically in 2004 when the war really blew up in Al Anbar, and you had heavy fighting in Ramadi and Fallujah, and it was being done by the units of the 1st Marine Division that are located at Camp Pendleton, and it was women like Kerry that, you know, shouldered the brunt of that. And so I wanted to talk about that. Talk about that. The evolution of now you have, you know, you have, they were called family readiness officers. They're called something else now. But they're professionals. They're people that get paid to do that. They're not spouses. And so the Marine Corps found that that was not a very good model when people are dying. So, you know, in peacetime, you know, in peacetime, you know, is one thing, you know, because it doesn't happen very often. The but in combat, when people are getting killed, you know, it's just, it's brutal. So, so the Marine Corps ditched that model and went to something different. So we'll talk about that on Wednesday. On Thursday, you'll hear Jeff Kenny and Tim Lynch. Both of, you know, both of them are friends of Will and Carrie's, and you'll hear both of them on Thursday. And then on Friday, the chef's going to be there. So, as I said, only 2 hours this week because of that's all I can do. That's all I can do with all this other stuff going on. So, and then so, but we'll do that. We'll do that. The other thing we'll talk about this morning is Battle of Okinawa began on this date in 1945. The official dates of the battle are from April 1st. To June 22nd. So, yeah. How about that? 82 days, right? 82 days. So, yeah, and it made, Eugene Sledge went ashore. Longest fight the Marine Corps had in World War II. Casualties, United States, 14,009, somewhere between 14,009 and 20,019 killed in action. There's an estimate of 2,520 killed in action. So, 38,000 wounded. And then another estimate of 55,162. So somewhere between 38,000 and 55,000 wounded. During the fight on the United States side, 221 tanks were destroyed. 12 destroyers were sunk. 15 amphibious ships were sunk. 9 other ships were sunk. 386 ships were damaged. Somewhere between 40,000 and 100,000 civilians were killed out of an estimated 300,000 on the island. On the Japanese side, somewhere between 77,000 and 110,000 were killed. The U.S. estimate is 110,000. 7,000 were captured. Japanese ships sunk. 1 battleship, 1 light cruiser, 5 destroyers, 9 other warships, 1,400 aircraft lost, 27 tanks destroyed, 1,700 artillery pieces, anti-tank guns, and anti-aircraft guns destroyed. Pretty amazing. So, known as Operation Iceberg. Marines of the 1st Marine Division went ashore on Okinawa starting today. Units from the United Kingdom, Canada, New Zealand, and Australia all supported the invasion. The 1st Marine Division, the 2nd Marine Division, and the 6th Marine Division all participated in the fight. I'm curious who the commanders are for the, were for the 1st Marine Division. We'll talk about that. All right, so with all of that said, on a sad day, that's as a result of a sad weekend. Good morning to you. to you. United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. Dedicated to the Cosentini family. Great friends of mine and a lot of people. And obviously our thoughts and prayers go out to Will and the entire family.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make a jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility
to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me. I'm a poor veteran or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
The days are dwindling for Neller. That's right. Going to put his ass out to pasture. Time to check the weather here on All Marine Radio. Currently sunny and 41, about a half hour south of the nation's capital in Quantico, Virginia. It is cloudy and 45 at Camp Lejeune. It is cloudy and 44 in Granbury, Texas. It is sunny and 49 in Twin Dam Palms. It is cloudy and 51 at Camp Pendleton. It is dark, clear, and 60 in Okinawa, Japan. In the Al-Anbar province of Iraq, where a special purpose MAGTAF hangs out, it is cloudy and 66. In Afghanistan, where it's warmed up considerably, it is dark, cloudy, and 78 early in the evening. And in the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of Southern California, where the weekend was absolutely drop-dead gorgeous, cloudy and 61, looking for a high of 79 today, 67 on Tuesday, and 65 on Wednesday, which won't make any difference to me because I won't be here. So, let us look at your weather. When we come back, we'll check news headlines. More of All Marine Radio coming up on this Monday here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I want to walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and so be made of this heartbreak.
Top story over the weekend, in the relative to Marine Corps was the crash of a Cobra helicopter. And, you know, it's interesting. When you talk to pilots, they'll tell you that, you know, unless something goes catastrophically wrong, they're more than confident that they can get the aircraft on the deck before, you know, even when it's in trouble. And, you know, so whenever you see things like this, always the first question now, given the state of Marine Corps aviation, is this just an accident, or is this attributable to lack of stick time, you know, in the aircraft, and now we're flying more, and so because our aviation status is getting better, and you know, this is a function of those lack of flying hours, just an experience. So again, but nobody's saying anything, we will obviously wait months to find out what the Marine Corps says about what happened here. So our top story, the number two story, is out of Paris Island, and I alluded to this before, but in my opinion, a bit of a nothing burger. Marine Corps has been doing this since. The Marine Corps has been doing recruit training like this for a long, and so you know, it's happening for the first time in recruit training. Now the question is, what is the impact? Is the impact in recruit training going to be somehow different from the impact at Officer Candidate School? I guess that's what this initial company was designed to evaluate. But the age difference would be certainly greater, right? Younger women would be involved in it. Does that have an effect? So I guess that would be my question. So what's different between the two? Officer Candidate School, more mature, physically stronger because they're older. Does that have a profound impact on the experience, given that both groups, men and women, share the same issue? But Marine Cortez not to talk about this stuff. I mean, and I know the guys that are doing these things, and you would think that they would come on, but I try to get Sparky Renforth to come on to talk about, you know, just general discussion about, you know, the hazing incidents, about gender integration, and I mean, these are guys I know, friends of mine. They're like, sorry, man, ain't happening. So I'm going to play you a little audio that was produced by the Marine Corps, probably by the public, probably comes out of the public affairs office. In fact, I'm sure it comes out of the public affairs office at Marine Corps Recruit Depot, Paris Island, done by probably their combat camera people and whatnot. So, anyhow, this is what they put out. It's about a minute and 40 seconds. The first billboard says this. On January 5, India Company began recruit training with 6 platoons, 5 male and 1 female. Today they graduated, joining the ranks of those that have gone before them and writing another chapter in Marine Corps history. So here is that video produced by the Marine Corps. And if I could turn the volume up. I did turn the volume up, but they turned it back down.
For this cycle, we had 5 male...
Captain Trenton Snoddy, S-N-O-D-Y.
Platoons and 1 female platoon. We executed the same training schedule as we would have if we had not been a combined company. The only difference was that the female platoon was co-located in our same barracks, but they stayed on their own deck, just like every other platoon. But the training cycle itself was executed exactly the same as it would have been any other company.
Well, I mean, the reason it wasn't that different is because we kept that platoon integrity. So those female drill instructors with those female recruits...
This is Captain Tiffany Aguiar.
That's all that teaching and that mentorship, it comes from the squad bay with them. And so most of the time, they're in the squad bays. If they're not out for a training event, they're in the squad bays. They're learning, they're getting mentored by their drill instructors, and they're keeping that model within the squad bay.
And that's just how the Marine Corps trains it by platoon. It doesn't matter what battalion or what company you are in, they have to have that continuity.
This is one of the drill instructors. Hold on. I need to give you her name. So
they have to have that continuity in order to transform them. RN, they have to have that battalion or what company.
Staff Sergeant Brittany Roba, K-R-O-H-A, Croa. I'm sure I'm butchering it, but not the first time. So she's one of the drill instructors.
You are in, they have to have that continuity in order to transform them.
She wasn't one of the drill instructors. She was the senior drill instructor.
The platoon model has been...
This is Brigadier General James Glenn, one of the lieutenants that I put through the infantry officer course in honor about 1990 or 91. Now, Commanding General Paris Island.
And the model we've used throughout the history of recruit training. So it is the essence of unit-wise how we make Marines. It's fundamentally about infrastructure in this.
So that's the same model that the Marine Corps has used it in OCS for at least 35 years, what, 83 when I went through. It's now 2019, so what is that, 17 and 19, 36 years. All right, so again, here's the article that comes out of the, and I don't know why, the this is the Beaufort Gazette headline. For the first time, male and female Marine Corps company graduates together on Paris Island. Approximately 50 women formed one of six platoons within India Company. The company was comprised of 300 total recruits. Their graduation is a testimony of two indisputable truths about recruit training. Our platoon model is and remains the proven and ideal method for making Marines, and a single company comprised of male and female platoons is a practical training option when the conditions permit. Brigadier General James Glynn, Commanding General of Marine Corps Recruit Depot Paris Island, said, and he's also the commanding officer of the Eastern Recruiting District. PFC Morgan Fiedler, a recruit from Gulfport, Mississippi, graduated on Friday, said training with male recruits better prepared her for life in the fleet. Quote, we had to fight with the guys, do PT with the guys. We did chow together in every training event. We were always with them, Fiedler said. It was fun, built our confidence up, and prepared us for a real combat scenario. Your enemy is not going to give you any slack, and the guys didn't give us any slack. The gender-integrated training may not be repeated each training cycle, according to Warrant Officer Bobby Yarborough with Marine Corps Recruit Training, Communication, and Strategy Operations. Quote, they just graduated today, so obviously there needs to be some assessment that needs to be done. Yarborough said that there are no plans to repeat the model for the remainder of 2019. Kate Germano is quoted in the article, quote, I see this as the elimination of a big barrier to inclusion of women in the Marine Corps, retired Lieutenant Colonel Kate Germano, who once commanded Paris Island's all-female 4th Recruit Training Battalion. My hope is that having women and men train side by side will eliminate a lot of the assumptions about what men and women are capable of doing. They're integrated in the company, but they train as platoons, right? So when they say side by side, they don't mean intermixed, okay? So when you go, for instance, when you go do the obstacle course, right, and you break up and somebody's doing ropes, another platoon is, so there's two obstacle courses that kind of meet in the center, right? You start from separate ends, and there's two separate courses, right? And so the ropes are both together in the middle, right? So let's just say we have four platoons, right? Two platoons are on the ropes, right? The other two have their run of all the obstacles leading up to the ropes, and you do that over and over again. And then you rotate. Somebody blows a whistle or yells, and you rotate, right? So you're there as, you know, you're there as separate platoons. So I'd love to have that the platoon commander of the female platoon up and talk to her about what exactly they did. So pretty interesting. So that's in the news over the course of the weekend. Another story that kind of caught my eye was this: why Iraq's president says there's no serious opposition to U.S. troops in his country. This is an Associated Press story. Iraq's president said Friday he does not see any serious opposition to the presence of American forces in Iraq, provided they continue to be there specifically to assist Iraqi forces in the fight against against the Islamic State group. Bahram Salah said there is general consensus that Iraq needs continued collaboration with these forces, which he said can go on as long as necessary. He also warned that the threat from ISIS extremists is far from over, despite the announcement of the group's territorial defeat in Syria last week. He spoke to the Associated Press in an exclusive interview in Baghdad last Friday before traveling to Tunis to attend an annual Arab summit meeting. Some 5,200 troops are stationed in Iraq as part of the security agreement with the Iraqi government to advise, assist, and support the country's troops in their fight against Islamic State. So, kind of interesting. It seems to be fairly pragmatic, fairly pragmatic comments from the president of Iraq. And you don't often see that. Most of the time it is, you know, couched in other rhetoric. Here's the next quote. When asked about Syria, quote, "We better embrace Syria and hope Syria overcomes the difficulties it has been facing. Simply isolating Syria is not the way to move forward," Salsa. He rejected Trump's decision this week to recognize Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights, which Israel seized from Syria in the 1967 war and annexed in 1982, saying the decision was not conducive to peace and security in the Middle East. The Iraqi president also called for the withdrawal of Turkish troops from northern Iraq, adding that their continued presence was an obstacle to the development of relations between the two countries. So again, the backdrop of all of this kind of plays out, and I remember General Allen, when he came on, John Allen came on and talked about that. Anybody, when they look at the Middle East, that doesn't see the ongoing struggle between the Sunnis and the Shiites, as evidenced in Shiite Iran and Sunni Saudi Arabia, doesn't understand the Middle East. If you don't start there, you're going nowhere. So when in these Arab summit meetings, first of all, Arab does not mean Iran, okay? They're not Arabs, first thing you know. So that is the divide. The question is, at some point, can they come together as a group of nations and reject the terrorism that comes out of that part of the world, that victimizes so many innocent people and destabilizes nations, to move the collective in some positive direction? And, you know, heretofore they haven't been able to do that. Yeah, heretofore. Boom. How about that? On a Monday. The Early Bird. We'll do the top five stories in Early Bird. Alex Holling's going to join us here on a two-hour version of the program. So, number one, two pilots killed in Marine Corps helicopter crash in Arizona. We talked about that. Number two, tweeting Trump injects White House into the SEALs war crime case. So this happened in a series of tweets. Yeah, if you can imagine such a thing, right? President announcing things as he does on Twitter. With a Saturday morning Twitter message, President Donald Trump ordered the Navy to modify the detention of Special Warfare Operator Chief Eddie Gallagher, who is behind bars waiting a court-martial in San Diego for allegedly stabbing to death an Islamic State prisoner. In honor of his past service to our country, hashtag Eddie Gallagher will soon be moved to a less restrictive confinement while he awaits his day in court, Trump tweeted. Process should move forward quickly, with an exclamation mark. In his message, the president nodded to the Fox News Network and U.S. Representative Ralph Norman, a North Carolina Republican, who has led the fight alongside a battled Republican Duncan Hunter of California to free Gallagher. Trump stopped short of ending Gallagher's prosecution, something Hunter and other supporters have urged the president to do. Duncan Hunter keeping a low profile these days after his issues relative to, and I believe, well, I don't believe, I you know, he was charged, what, by federal authorities for campaign finance law violations. So, Duncan Hunter. Number three, U.S. condemns Russia troop deployment to troubled Venezuela. So, again, this is the Monroe Doctrine, right? This is the Monroe Doctrine, and we don't want you in our hemisphere, but we'll be all up in the Black Sea, we'll be in the Ukraine, we'll be in the Baltics, right? We'll be all over your shit. Just don't come near ours. And Putin, you know, for whatever reason, not afraid to rock the boat, right? Doing his Dr. Evil, James Bond thing. The Trump administration on Friday condemned Venezuela's President Nicolas Maduro for what it said was his reliance on foreign military personnel to stay in power and renewing a warning to Russia against getting involved. Quote, we strongly caution actors external to the Western Hemisphere against deploying military assets to Venezuela or elsewhere in the hemisphere with the intent of establishing or expanding military operations, said John Bolton on Friday in a statement released by the White House. So we'll see where that goes. Venezuela is teetering, right, on chaos. And their inability to provide electricity and all the other things that a nation requires, the water problems that they're having down there, as the nation has fallen apart, means that he should be replaced. But democracy is not functioning there and hasn't functioned there for a while. Headline in Stars and Stripes, we got zero notice. Army resumes Cold War era snap deployments to Europe. The infantrymen of the 1st Battalion, 6th Infantry Regiment, were in the middle of a gunnery exercise in El Paso, Texas, on March 11th, when the call came in from division headquarters deployed to Poland. Quote, we got zero notice, Colonel Chad Calfont, commander of the 2nd Armored Brigade, 1st Armored Division, the battalion's higher headquarters located on Cold War Road at Fort Bliss. A week later, 1,500 brigade soldiers were bound for training grounds in western Poland in a deployment reminiscent of the Cold War when no-notice mobilizations were a main feature of the military's strategy for countering the old Soviet Union. Now the Army is returning, is relearning the art of snap deployments as it adapts to a new Pentagon strategy known as dynamic force employment, which calls upon the military as a whole to keep adversaries off balance with more unpredictable troop movements. It's a feature of something General Mattis put in place. So that's kind of an interesting story, dynamic force deployment. So what it means to units here in CONUS that are, quote, not really in the cycle, right? All right, that is a look at the news. I'm just looking real quick. Two quick stories before we get out of here. One is General Eric Smith. He's 3MF commander. Helped find dangerous criminals responsible for Okinawa on base blast. A Marine official is asking the public for help in apprehending those responsible for breaking into Camp Foster on March 24th and detonating an incendiary device outside of a building that houses Japanese government officials. The appeal was made last Thursday by 3rd Marine Expeditionary Force Commander Lieutenant General Eric Smith. Quote, I would take this opportunity to thank Okinawa police and to call out those who perpetrated it as cowardly, as dangerous criminals who have no regard for the children who ride their bicycles near those facilities. There's a shrine right next to that facility. There's a shrine near there, and they ignited a butane can near a shrine. That's unacceptable. So I would use this opportunity to ask anyone, any of your readers who might know something, to please notify the police so we can take a very serious criminal or criminals off the streets of Okinawa. Police officials declined to say whether they believe the blast is tied to the Okinawan protest groups fighting to stop the relocation of the Marine Corps Air Station Futima within the prefecture. However, it is not the first such incident, and it happened just days after Japanese Defense Minister Takashi Iwaya announced that new landfill work would begin for a controversial runway at Camp Schwab in the northern part of the island. I didn't know, you know what, I didn't know about that they were building the runway in the water until recently. The runway being built into the Ora Bay will one day allow for the closure of the Marine Corps Air Station Futima and the relocation of Marine air assets to Schwab. You know, I don't know. I don't, like, what is the genesis of the protest that gets all the aviation assets, right, out of the south part of the island where you've read about them, right? Like, what's the problem with that? Task and Purpose, Jeff Shogel, who's been on the program before, writes an article entitled Dakota Meyer Explains Why He Hates His Medal of Honor. The, you know, when you hear Jeremiah Workman talk about be interviewed, he never says the word Navy Cross. He says the award. And I think that's emblematic. If I called him and said, why do you do that? He would say this, right? Some form of, I don't want this thing. I don't need this thing. All I want is those three guys back. In an interview on Thursday with a podcast, Meyer said he still blames himself for not being able to reach four Marines trapped by enemy fire sooner. It took him five attempts to get through the ambush to reach the Marines who were dead when he arrived. Meyer refuses to wear his Medal of Honor because it represents the worst day of his life, he told the podcast. Quote, no matter how you look at it, I'm here, my teammates are dead. That's hard enough, but now I get this award to live and to face a nation, to be a hero when it's the biggest failure of my life. It's the most mind-fucking thing ever. I look at the medal and I throw up. I hate it. I resent it. I refuse to tell anybody that I am a Medal of Honor recipient. I hate it. I fucking hate it. With certainty, I could have predicted, you know, those words coming out of his mouth. Things that we don't think about. And then the pain of, like Jeremiah Workman, of becoming a celebrity that for something that you believe was one of the greatest failures of your life. Not easy. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we will talk with Alex Hollings here on this Monday in a two-hour version of All Marine Radio. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.